helping us. I said. They gave us our power so that we can fight, and Nyx has foreseen that the five of us can stop this war. But like you said, that's only one future out of many, my mom said gently. There's also a chance that you might fail. I sat back, unable to believe it. My mom always told me that if I put my mind to something, I could accomplish it. She encouraged me to be the best I could be. Believe in yourself, and you will succeed, she always said. This mission was more important than anything else in my life. Why didn't she believe in me now?
If I were you, I wouldn't do it, Becca chimed in for the first time since I'd finished telling the story. It sounds scary. You could get hurt.
You could die. It was true, but I forced myself to smile, not wanting to worry her. I have the power to heal, remember? I reminded her. I'll be fine.
I think we should move, my dad said suddenly.
But we just got here, my mom said. Your job is here.
It's not healthy for Nicole to be here, he said. These people are messing up her priorities. Ever since she moved here, she's been distracted. She rarely spends time with us, her family, anymore. And she's so busy with this training that she barely spends any time studying.
I don't need to spend much time studying, I reminded him. I can harness yellow energy to help me focus and get my work done faster than I ever could before. My grades haven't dropped at all, I promise.
They might not have dropped, but if what you say is true, imagine how much you could excel if you spent more time on your schoolwork, he said. You could get straight A's. You could even have a shot at getting accepted into an Ivy League school.
I had no idea how to tell him that worrying about what college I might get into was not high on my list of priorities anymore. He'd always wanted the best for me, and I knew that part of the reason why he was happy about moving to a town so close to Boston was because he thought it might make me interested in one of the great colleges in the area. Maybe even Harvard. Unfortunately, college was the last thing on my mind. But perhaps I could get him to support my decision by appealing to his concerns. If we lose this war, and the Titans escape from Kerberos, then it's likely that there won't be any more colleges for me to apply to, I said. How about this? Let me work with the others to seal the portal. Once we succeed, then I'll spend more time studying. Maybe I'll get my grades high enough to be considered by Harvard. Deal? His eyes lit up the moment I said the name of the school.
You're going to apply to Harvard? He asked.
If you let me do this, then sure, I said. I might not get in, but I'll try.
Don't lose focus of the problem, Jerry, my mom said to him. We can't allow her to go on this mission to Antarctica tomorrow morning.
She turned to me, her eyes brimming with concern. I hope you understand, she said, softer now. You're our daughter, and we love you. It's our job to protect you and keep you safe. We can't let you put yourself in danger like this. Maybe I should just get Darius to come over here, I said, since we clearly weren't getting anywhere. He can use gray energy on you to make you forget about everything I just told you. It would be easier that way.
So you can go on lying to us? My mom asked, her voice cracking. From what you said, I know we probably wouldn't be able to fight Darius's magic, but I hope he wouldn't do something like that to us. We're your family, and we love you. We deserve to know the truth.
I wrapped my arms around myself and sank into my seat. She was right. They did deserve to know the truth. That was why I'd insisted we delay the mission until tomorrow morning, so that I could come clean to my family.
I just hadn't thought they would try to forbid me from going. After all, I hadn't come here to ask for their permission. I'd come here so I could be upfront and honest with them, so that if anything happened to me while I was gone, they would know the truth of what I was fighting for. Completing this mission was my destiny. No one could stop me, not even my parents. I just wished they could understand and accept that. I ran my fingers over my necklace, tracing the details of the sun charm given to me by Apollo. What if I called for his help right now? I doubted he would come. He never did. But if he did come, maybe he could convince my parents how important it is that I do my part to stop the return of the Titans. He was a god. They would have to listen to him. But I dropped my hand back to my side, letting the pendant fall back onto my neck. Because as much as I wanted to meet him, I didn't need Apollo to swoop in here and stand up for me. This was my problem. I had to be the one to solve it. I didn't tell you all of this to ask for permission, I said, keeping my voice calm and steady, like an adult. I told you this because I want you to know the truth, because I don't want to keep on lying to you. Me, Blake, Kate, Chris, and Danielle are the only ones who can stop the Titans from returning to Earth. After being locked in Kerberos for so long, the Titans aren't in their right minds anymore. If they return, make no mistake, they will destroy our planet. And I will not allow that to happen. No one said anything for a few seconds. Was I wrong in coming to my parents at all? Maybe my initial concerns were right, and this was too much for them. Maybe it would be best if I called Darius over here and asked him to wipe their memories of the past few hours. He could explain my upcoming absence by telling them that there was another school trip. It had worked when we went to Greece, so it should work again. Just as I was about to text Darius to ask for his help, my mom broke the silence. I need to talk with your dad about this privately, she said. We'll come back here to talk to you once we've figured out our thoughts. The two of them went to their room to talk, leaving me in the living room with Becca. At first, she continued to stare at me, shocked. But then the floodgates opened, and she couldn't stop talking. She had lots of questions, mainly about magic and how it worked, and I happily answered them. Surprisingly enough, she was actually glad that she didn't have magic. She said that everything I had to do sounded scary to her, and she was glad not to be responsible for fighting monsters. Even though Darius had made her forget about being kidnapped and almost killed by the harpy, did the experience still remain in her subconscious? If it did, I was glad, because Becca was right to want to stay away from danger. I'd never felt so powerless as when I'd seen her bound to the chair in that cave. I didn't want her involved in any of this ever again. When my parents came back in, I watched them, looking for some clue about their decision. But their expressions gave away nothing. I hoped they'd decided they were okay with me going on this mission, because if they weren't, it wasn't going to stop me. Saving the world from the Titans was my purpose in life. The gods had gifted me with these powers, and I wasn't going to let them, and the rest of the world, down. I was going to do everything I could to succeed, no matter what. I just hoped my parents could support me in that. Your father and I talked, and we decided that you will be allowed to go to Darius's tomorrow morning, my mom finally said. On one condition. Despite the fact that I hadn't been asking for their permission to begin with, I was glad that I had it. What condition? I asked, curious about what it would be.
We'll be driving you there, and will go inside to meet him, my dad said. We do not doubt everything that you've told us, but it will make us more confident if we were to hear it all from him directly. Once we hear from him, then we'll decide if you're allowed to go, or if you'll come home with us.
My heart dropped at their words. They still thought they could stop me from going. I didn't want to have to go against them, but at least this was a step in the right direction. Of course, I said, confident that Darius would back me up on this. If speaking with him didn't convince my parents to let me go, then I didn't know what would.
And one more thing, my mom said. No matter what happens, we don't want Darius to wipe our memories of what you told us here tonight. We don't want you to go back to keeping this secret from us. Can you promise us that you won't let him do that?
I almost told them that I promised, but I held my tongue. Because the last time I promised someone something, when I told Ethan and Rachel that I wouldn't let anything happen to them during our journey through Greece, I hadn't been able to keep it. And while Ethan had said that he understood my decision to save Blake before his sister, he never said that he'd forgiven me for it. I no longer wanted to make promises that I wasn't sure I could keep. If Darius wipes your memories, I won't be able to stop him, I said. But I'll promise you this. I'll ask him not to. Because I don't want to continue to lying to you either. And if he doesn't listen to me, then I'll tell you the truth again when I return. If I return, I thought, thinking of Rachel's lifeless body in the Hydra's cave. The memory of it made me shudder. Because I didn't want to die, not anytime soon. I'd always thought of death as being something that I would worry about as an old woman, not something that I would have to think about now. But if I didn't go on this mission, then we would all surely die when the Titans returned to Earth. The best way for me to try to make sure that I would live to an old age was to do everything I could to seal the portal forever. My dad looked at my mom, as if asking her if my answer was acceptable. I suppose that will have to do, she said. We'll drive you over to Darius's first thing in the morning. I'm very much looking forward to meeting him. With that, we said goodnight and went to bed. I thought I would have trouble falling asleep, but that wasn't the case. I texted Blake to let him know that I was too tired to stay awake any longer and that I would tell him about what happened in the morning. And then I fell into bed, zonking out the moment my head hit the pillow, which was a good thing. Because I needed all the rest I could get before the journey tomorrow.
Chapter 11. Hypatia, the head elder of Greece, was already at Darius's when my parents and I got there, so they were able to meet her as well. Once introduced, they went upstairs to speak with her and Darius privately. I waited downstairs with the others and updated them on what had happened last night. My parents only talked with Darius and Hypatia for about 10 minutes. I paced around the living room the entire time, too anxious to sit still. I was afraid that when they came back downstairs, they were going to grab me and try to force me to move far away from here. Instead, they simply hugged me goodbye, wished me luck, and headed out the door. I watched their car back out of the driveway, suspicious that they'd left so quickly and with so little fuss. You didn't wipe their memories, did you? I asked Darius and Hypatia once their car was gone.
Of course not, Darius said. You asked us not to, and I respect that.
I said. Then how do you convince them to let me go so easily?
You never asked us not to use gray energy on them at all, Hypatia said. So we reinforced everything you told them last night and helped them accept your decision to do what is right. They now fully understand how important it is for you to complete your mission, and will respect and support all of your future decisions on the matter. I thanked them, grateful that they'd respected my wishes. But I wasn't sure how I felt about what they had done, because on one hand, I wanted my parents to respect my decision by their own free will. On the other hand, it made everything easier to know that I wouldn't have to fight them on this any further, and that I could be honest with them while focusing on what was important, making sure this mission was a success. It was a lot to think about. But since there was nothing I could do about it now, I did my best to brush it aside. I could worry about it later. Right now, we had more important matters to deal with. Mainly, going to Antarctica, entering Keone's ice palace, and acquiring the golden sword.
Now, I trust that you are all dressed properly, in multiple layers to guard against the cold? Hypatia asked. Even though Chris will be able to control the temperature around you, you still must be prepared for anything.
Yes, I said, since last night we'd all looked up what to wear for such extreme temperatures. The others nodded as well. Luckily, since we lived in Massachusetts, we owned enough winter clothes that we were able to layer properly. My wardrobe that I'd had in Georgia would never have been up for the task. It was sweltering inside, and all the clothing made me feel clunky and less nimble. But we would be grateful for the layers once we stepped through the portal.
Good. Hypatia nodded. Since you won't have cell phone service to let me know when to open the portal for your return, and I can't go with you since I would be a burden during your fight with the ice nymphs, I've devised a plan. I will open the portal in intervals after your arrival.
The first interval will be after 5 minutes.
That is your emergency portal back home, in case something goes wrong immediately after your arrival. The second interval is after 1 hour. If you're unable to win against the ice nymphs, this is your chance to return. I'll open it again 2 hours after that, just in case the fight takes longer. After that, I'll assume that you've won against the ice nymphs and are in Keone's ice palace, or have found cover in the nearby South Pole station. There's a witch who works at the South Pole station. His name is Jeffrey Feldman, and he's the breakfast chef there. He's been alerted that you might arrive and seek him out. If you end up in the South Pole station, find him, and he'll contact me so I can send a portal to you there.
And if we're in Keone's ice palace? I asked.
Then Keone will be able to create a portal leading back here, she said. Now, are you ready?
We told her that yes, we were.
Take note of the time when the last person comes through, she said. I'll create the interval portals according to that time.
With that, she held her hands out and created the swirling portal on the wall of Darius's living room. Portals were always foggy, making it difficult to see what was on the other side of them. This one was cloudier than usual, as if all that waited on the other side was ice, as far as the eye could see. Which, I supposed, it was. Chris walked through first, because he would be heating the air for when the rest of us arrived. Kate followed him, and Danielle went after her, which left only Blake and me.
Together?
He asked, holding out his hand. Together, I repeated, placing my hand in his. His eyes met mine. He gave my hand a squeeze. And together, we stepped through the portal.
Chapter 12. My stomach dropped with the roller coaster sensation that I had every time I walked through a portal. I would never get used to it. Which was saying a lot, because I loved roller coasters. But there was something terrifying about it when you weren't strapped into anything, and felt like you were free-falling into nothingness. At least, this time, I had Blake's hand to hold me steady. My feet touched solid ground. An icy wind cut into my face, It was freezing, all the way down to my bones. I wanted to get inside and enjoy a steaming mug of hot chocolate. But I opened my eyes, and in front of me, as far as I could see, was a flat, endless expanse of white snow. There were no mountains, no buildings, nothing. It was like a desert, but with snow instead of sand. The sun hung low in the sky, as if preparing to set. But I knew from reading an article last night about Antarctica that the sun wouldn't set until 2 weeks from now, on the spring equinox. In Antarctica, the sun rose on the fall equinox and stayed up until setting on the spring equinox. They had two seasons, day, which was summer, and night, which was winter. I was glad that our trip was during their day and not during their night.
"Welcome to the South Pole," Chris said with a huge smile, as if he owned the place. "Turn around and check out the sign."
I turned around, and sure enough, there was a big white sign that said, "Geographic South Pole," with a map of where we were. Next to it was an American flag, and far behind it was a cluster of industrial-looking buildings that I assumed made up the station where we would find the witch who could contact Hypatia in case of emergency. I rubbed my hands over my arms, trying to keep warm.
"I thought you were going to warm it up for us before we got here," I asked Chris.
"Trust me, I did warm it up," he laughed. "By about 40 degrees. I would guess that right now it feels like 0 degrees Fahrenheit. It'll take too much energy to warm it up much more, and I figured that this was tolerable."
"Barely," I muttered, my teeth chattering.
"Spoken like a southerner."
Danielle rolled her eyes.
"This feels fine to me."
Blake wrapped his arms around me, and I sunk into his embrace, letting him attempt to warm me up. It helped, but it didn't change the fact that it was freezing out here. Literally. I couldn't imagine what it would have felt like if Chris hadn't been warming it up for us. Negative 40 degrees was beyond my comprehension. The people who voluntarily worked on this frozen continent must be out of their minds.
"So, any idea where the ice palace is?" Kate asked.
"Are you kidding?"
Danielle said, looking out into the open plain of snow.
"It's right there."
I squinted at where she was looking, just in case I was missing something. But there was nothing there. Only untouched snow that went on for miles and miles until it disappeared into the clear blue sky of the horizon.
"Right where?"
Blake asked.
"All I see is snow."
"Right there." She pointed where we were all already looking, but as hard as I strained, I couldn't see anything resembling a palace.
"Is it really far in the distance or something?"
I'd always had perfect vision, but maybe it was time to get my eyes checked again. Danielle glared at us and crossed her arms, although she didn't look very intimidating, given all the layers of padding she was wearing.
"Now isn't the time to try being funny," she said. "Cool it, Ice Princess."
Chris held his hands out, as if trying to stop her from lashing out.
"I don't see anything either."
Danielle stared him down, like she was waiting for him to say that he was kidding. When it was clear that he wasn't taking it back, and that none of us were sticking up for her, she dropped her arms to her sides in defeat.
"Seriously?"
she asked, looking around at each of us.
"None of you can see that huge ice palace out there?"
"Nope," Blake said.
"We aren't just saying that we can't see it for the hell of it."
"Well, this is just great," Danielle huffed.
"How are any of you supposed to be helpful in getting into the palace when you can't even see that it exists?"
"Let's calm down and think this through logically," Kate said. "The gods can create shields around anything magical. That's why the islands of old mythology appear deserted to humans. But anyone who has magic, witches, demigods, or gods, can see through the shields to the islands. We know that the Ice Palace is heavily guarded because the Sword of Athena is kept there. The gods don't want anyone getting their hands on that sword. Is it too out there to think that they might create a shield around the Ice Palace so that no one, except for other gods perhaps, can see it at all?
It would make sense, I said. No one would be able to steal the sword if they can't see where it's kept.
So why can I see it? Danielle asked. I'm not a god, or even a demigod.
Because of your element, Blake said smoothly. If there's fire anywhere near me, I can always feel its presence, like it's a part of me. It's the same for you with water, right?
Yeah, Danielle said. Of course.
So because the palace is made of ice, Danielle's element, she's able to see it through the shield, Kate said.
Got it, I said. But if only Danielle can see the palace, then what are we supposed to do?
Easy,
Blake answered.
We need to pass through the shield. Once we're through the perimeter, we'll be able to see what's behind it.
Before anyone could respond, the sign that marked the location of the geographic South Pole rippled and shimmered. A swirling circle was now in the place where the writing had been before. The first portal, I said, looking into it. As always, the portal was foggy, but I could vaguely make out the warm browns of Darius's living room.
Yes, Kate said, checking her watch. Which means the next one will be in 1 hour, and then the next one, 2 after that. If this takes us longer than 3 hours, we need to hope that we're either in Keone's Ice Palace, or we need to get back here and find that witch at the station.
So then what are we standing around here for? Danielle turned in the direction of the supposed Ice Palace, her hand on the grip of her sword.
Follow me to the palace.
Chapter 13. I didn't know where Danielle was taking us, but this walk was lasting much longer than expected. After about 15 minutes, Chris had to stop using his power to heat the air around us because he needed to conserve energy for the eventual fight. So we had to brave the hike in negative 40 degree weather. It was impossible. At those temperatures, I coughed with each breath I tried to take, as if the air was a knife stabbing my lungs. We'd been careful to cover up every bit of our skin. But even so, the wind whipped against my body, the cold ripping into every inch of my flesh. Everything hurt. My scalp, my fingers, my nose, even my eyeballs hurt, as if they were thickening into ice cubes within my skull. I could barely even blink. The air burned like cold fire and dug all the way to the marrow in my bones. My skin felt like it was about to crack into a million different pieces, and I couldn't think to put one foot in front of the other. Perhaps my brain was freezing too. After this, I would never, ever complain about the winter in Kinsley again. All I wanted was to run back to the sign, jump through the portal, and warm up near Darius's fireplace. But I didn't think I had the energy to move that much. The cold had sapped everything out of me. It was tempting to drop down to the ground, huddle in a ball, close my eyes, and try to wish myself away from here. This weather was going to kill me. It was too cold to talk, but Blake must have been as miserable as I was, because after 10 minutes of trying to brave the cold, he flicked on his lighter and used his power to grow the fire. We all huddled around it, and I leaned closer to the flames and took a deep breath, glad that the air no longer froze my lungs. Thank you, I said, once I was able to speak again. That was absolute torture.
I know,
he said, wrapping his other arm around me to protect me from the cold. I leaned into him, grateful for the additional warmth.
But we have to keep moving. The sooner we get to that palace and fight off those ice nymphs, the sooner we can go inside. Danielle, how much further do we need to go?
We're almost there, she said, her voice shaking from the cold. Maybe about 20 more minutes.
Good, Blake said. I can hold the fire for that long. We'll huddle around it as we walk. Once we're there, Chris can take over and warm the air while we fight the nymphs.
15 minutes later, we walked through the shield. 1 minute, I was staring out at a plain of snow, as far as the eye could see. Then, with my next step, a towering snow palace materialized out of thin air. I froze in place, gazing at the palace. It reminded me of the Emerald City in The Wizard of Oz, except that instead of being green, it was made of ice, and it was surrounded by a moat of freezing water. Its many turrets rose up like icicles, glimmering in the sunlight. The tallest turret reached so high that I wondered if a person standing up there could see across the entire continent.
Wow, I finally said, looking over to Danielle. You've been seeing that this entire time?
Yep, she said, looking out at the palace. It's pretty incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, I nodded. It is.
But we didn't have much time to admire it, because ice nymphs on white horses surfaced out of the moat, galloping straight in our direction. Chapter 14. There were 5 of them in all, their skin white as snow, their platinum hair flying behind them as their horses gained speed. Chris scurried behind us, warming the air up enough so we could function. He wouldn't be able to use his power for anything else right now, so it was up to the 4 of us to defeat the ice nymphs.
We need to knock them off their horses, Blake yelled to us. Then they'll be easier to fight.
I steadied my bow, ready to shoot. I didn't even need to ask Blake to give me fire. He lit up the tip of the arrow with flames a second after I strung it through. I released the flaming arrow, aiming straight for the nymph in the center. But she held her hand up and shot ice out of her palm, extinguishing the flame and stopping the arrow in its path. As the arrow fell to the ground, Kate and Blake shot their guns at the nymphs, but the bullets deflected off their icy skin.
The guns aren't working, Chris shouted to them. You need to try something else.
I can't.
Kate backed up and held her gun up in defeat.
The ground here is buried under more than a mile of ice. My powers won't reach that far.
The nymphs shot spears of ice at us from their hands, but Blake stopped each one with a fireball, melting them on impact.
They're shooting fast, he said,
and just when he spoke, he missed one. It grazed Kate's shoulder, ripping her outer layer of clothing.
I won't be able to hold them off like this for much longer.
Danielle held her hands up, and the ice daggers stopped. The nymphs flung their hands out as if creating them, but nothing happened. They pulled back on their horses, bringing them to a halt, and examined their hands in confusion. They raised them up and tried again, sneering when their power still didn't work. Their eyes were such a pale shade of blue that they looked almost white, and the inhumanness of their sharp features made me shudder. There was no warmth or kindness in their eyes, only a steely determination to kill us.
I'm holding them off from using their powers.
Danielle still held her hands out in front of her, and her voice was straining from the effort.
But they're strong. I won't be able to keep this up for much longer.
I strung another arrow through my bow, eyeing up my targets. Give me more fire, I told Blake, and he lit the tips of my arrows up with his flames. Let's see what the burning arrows do to them now that they can't block them. I shot the arrow straight at the center nymph, and it seared into her chest, knocking her off her horse. She dropped into the snowy ground and melted right into it. I did it again, and again, and again, and again, until all of the ice nymphs were gone. Their horses looked around in confusion, as if searching for their riders.
but I left the animals alone. It wasn't the horses' faults that their riders had been trying to attack us.
That's it? Kate asked. We're in the clear?
Maybe. I held tight onto my bow, just in case. I was about to lower it, when more horses with ice nymphs on them rose from the water and started galloping toward us. Maybe 20 of them in all. Crap. I gripped my bow and glanced over at Danielle. Can you hold off their powers too?
No.
She looked at them straight on, her eyes hard with determination.
There's too many of them.
But I have an even better idea.
Great, Kate said, her voice shaking. What do you need us to do?
Stand there and don't move, Danielle instructed. Use your swords to deflect their ice daggers. I'm going to let them get close. Just don't freak out, okay? I know what I'm doing.
I can melt most of the ice daggers with my fire, Blake said, his lighter ready. If they get too close, I'll fry them.
I nodded, even though I'd never seen him control enough fire to fry all 20 ice nymphs at once. Hopefully they wouldn't get close enough that it would come to that. In the meantime, they were closing in on us. So I swung my bow over my shoulder and reached for my sword, ready to deflect any ice daggers that came my way. All I had to do was focus on feeling where the ice daggers were heading before they made their way there. Like when Luke used the force to deflect blasters off his lightsaber with his eyes closed. The nymphs kept throwing their daggers, and we moved so quickly that we would be a blur to any human looking on. But doing so took energy, and the nymphs were seconds away from reaching us. Whatever Danielle had planned, she better do it now. Just as I was preparing for onslaught, the ground shook and cracked open. The gap crumbled out toward the nymphs on their horses until it was so wide that it would be impossible to jump. They screamed as they skidded forward, pulling on the horses to get them to slow down, their faces twisting in horror as they realized they didn't have enough time to stop. Together with their horses, they tumbled into the abyss, their cries echoing upward as they plunged down the dark descent. I stared down the ravine until the last of the screams were silenced. My heart broke for the lives of the horses lost, but I forced myself to focus. Was that the last of them? I asked, glancing back up in preparation for more of them to surface from the moat.
I hope so, Chris said, because I'm not going to be able to keep the air around us warm for much longer. We need to get inside, quickly.
The horses from the first 5 nymphs are unharmed, Blake said,
looking at where the horses poked at the ground, as if expecting their riders to rise again from the snow.
We can take them and ride up to the palace.
How are we supposed to cross this canyon? Chris asked. I can't fly each of us across and keep the air warm at the same time.
It's hardly a canyon, Kate corrected him. More like a ravine. But yeah, we'll need to get across it. Danielle, you managed to open it. Now can you close it?
Not without expending tons of unnecessary energy, she said. But this continent is covered in my element. I can figure out a more efficient way to get us across. With that, Danielle turned around, facing the expanse of snow behind us. She raised her arms, and when she did, the snow in front of her spiraled upward as if caught in a tornado. More and more snow was pulled into it, until it was taller than a tree. Then it transformed from snowflakes to water, glimmering and sparkling under the sun. Danielle turned around, the water moving with her, and shot it toward the cliff. It molded itself into the shape of a bridge, freezing in an instant.
There you go.
Danielle brushed her hands off and admired her creation.
Our very own ice bridge, complete with railings so no one slips off. After all, we don't need anyone scaring us, like Kate did when she almost fell off the ice path I created in the cave.
I can't believe that was only 2 months ago, I said. It feels like so much longer.
It does,
Danielle agreed. It's a miracle we got out of there alive. I had no idea what I was doing with my power back then.
We can talk about all this later, Chris said, stepping up to the bridge. We have to get to the palace before I run out of strength to keep the temperature up. Kate, are you coming?
He held his hand out to her and watched her expectantly.
You don't think I can manage to cross the bridge myself? She asked.
No, I know you can, he said. But I figured I would offer, for old time's sake.
In that case,
she stepped up to him and placed her hand in his.
Let's go.
They led the way, and Blake held out his hand to me as well. I took it, allowing him to lead me across the bridge. Danielle followed behind. Once Chris and Kate were across, Blake picked me up, cradling me in his arms, and started to run.
Race you to the horses,
he called behind him, as the others hurried to catch up. I wrapped my arms around his neck, laughing the entire way there. The others reached the horses at the same time that we did. Even though we had a head start, we were slower since Blake carried me the entire way. He placed me down, and I looked up into his eyes, wanting to kiss him so badly. I almost did, but then I stopped myself. Because the last time I'd kissed Blake in the middle of a mission, I'd lost time that I might have been able to use to save Rachel. We would have time together once we returned home. For now, I couldn't allow myself to be distracted. Have you ever ridden a horse before? I asked him instead.
A few times at summer camp, he said. It wasn't that hard.
Come on, Danielle chimed in. You quit after 1 year. I, on the other hand, stuck with it the whole time. I got to the advanced levels where I was doing jumping and everything. Okay, I said, but have you ever ridden bareback? No, she shuddered. I rode English saddle only. Why on earth would I ride bareback? Most people haven't. I smiled, happy to one-up her. But in case you didn't notice, these horses don't have saddles, so we don't have another choice. Luckily, one of my friends in Georgia lived on a horse farm, so I've ridden bareback a few times. It's more difficult, but I'm sure we can manage. First, you need to vault yourself up like this. I hopped over to the nearest horse to demonstrate. But the moment I got close to her, she snorted and twisted away from me, hurrying out of my reach.
Great start, Danielle snickered, and walked toward the same horse,
who didn't back away from her. Instead, the horse stood still, watching Danielle expectantly.
Explain again how I'm supposed to mount the horse without a saddle, she asked me.
Get some momentum, and then grab the mane and jump on up. I watched her, waiting for her to fail. Instead, she did as I said, gracefully mounting the horse's back. Once situated, she shook her hair out and straightened her shoulders, smirking proudly. How'd you do that on your first try? I asked. I didn't even think you liked animals. After you refused to touch the cows on Helios's island.
You aren't seriously comparing cows to horses, she said, crinkling her nose. Horses are much more civilized. And these aren't just any horses. They're water horses, created by Poseidon himself. I think they're connected to me because of my element.
She jumped off her horse and walked around to each of the other four. She touched each one of their noses, and they watched her diligently, as if they were somehow communicating with her.
Done, she said, returning to her original horse and vaulting herself onto its back. They'll let you all ride them now.
We easily mounted the horses, and then we were off. The ride was much smoother than any bareback ride I'd ever done. Likely because these horses were far from normal. We soared across the snow, as quick and smooth as running water itself. I felt like I was flying, and I was having so much fun that I was disappointed when the horses stopped at the edge of the moat.
I glanced warily at the water, worried that more ice nymphs might emerge from the surface. But so far, all was still.
What do we do now?
Danielle asked.
Storm the palace?
I don't think violence is the best way for us to introduce ourselves to the snow goddess, I said.
Seriously?
Danielle sighed and looked up at the sky.
She just sent all those ice nymphs to kill us. We're past the point of avoiding violence.
She sent those ice nymphs to see if we're worthy enough to claim the golden sword,
Kate corrected her.
We knew the sword would be guarded. We shouldn't take it personally.
Agreed, Blake said. Danielle, can you make another ice bridge so we can get across this moat?
Chris was unusually quiet, so I glanced over at him to see how he was doing. His jaw was clenched, his eyes full of concentration. He didn't look like he could keep the air around us heated for much longer. Once we're across the moat, we can always knock, I said. We can ask whoever answers to take us to Kioni. Then the door swung open, and a tall, pale woman stepped through. Her light blue dress glistened and billowed out as if made of ice itself, and her white blonde hair flowed down past her waist. She raised her hand, and snow whooshed around her, joining together to create a bridge across the moat. Once the bridge was fully formed, she stared at us, her gaze so cold that it sent shivers up my spine.
Hi.
Blake stepped forward to take the lead.
We're the elementals. Witches who've been gifted with abilities.
I know who you are, she interrupted him. I might live in Antarctica, but I'm not completely unaware of everything happening in the world. And after watching you fight and defeat my ice nymphs, I must say, I'm quite impressed. For that, you have gained entry into my home. Kioni? I asked, and she nodded to let me know that I was correct. You look like Elsa, from Frozen.
You're wrong, my dear, she said with a knowing smile. I've been around for far, far longer. It's Elsa who looks like me. Now, please come in. As I understand, we have quite a lot to talk about.
Chapter 15. We hurried inside the ice palace, and while the huge, high-ceilinged rooms were still made of ice, I was glad to find it surprisingly warm. Warm enough that we were able to remove our outer layers of clothing. An ice nymph, who Kioni assured us wouldn't attack us, collected our jackets and told us she would return them to us before we left. Are you still using your powers to heat the air? I asked Chris, worried about the toll this might take on him. How long could he keep this up before he expended too much energy? Nope, he said as he tried to fix his hair, which had become messed up from his hat.
I have no idea why it's not freezing in here. Probably magic. But hey, I'll take it.
It's not magic. The construction of the palace naturally warms the air inside, like an igloo, Kioni explained. The walls are packed with snow, which is a fantastic insulator. It gets quite warm in here, especially in the summer, when the sun is out. Antarctica is actually a desert, because we get little precipitation, so the skies are most always clear. The combination of the snow insulation and the sun can allow it to reach 16 degrees Celsius in the summer.
Which means what in Fahrenheit?
Chris asked.
About 60 degrees, Danielle replied quickly. Multiply by 2 and add 30. It's not exact, but it works.
Yes, Kioni nodded. That's correct. Although, I don't understand why you Americans don't follow the rest of the world and use Celsius. Anyway, since the sun is almost set, it's not quite that warm in here now. It's closer to around 35 degrees Fahrenheit, which, I imagine, feels warm compared to what you endured outside.
It does, I agreed, shivering at the memory. I'll be happy if I never have to be in temperatures like that again.
Me too,
Blake said, and the others all chimed in agreement as well.
As you can imagine, I have a few questions for you, Keone said. But I assume you're all famished, since being outside in such low temperatures burns a ton of calories. So, would you care to sit down for a meal?
My stomach rumbled at the mention of food. Yes, I said, wrapping my arms around my stomach to quiet it down. Food sounds amazing.
Fantastic.
Keone spun around, her dress as stiff as ice, despite her movement.
Follow me to the dining room.
We did as she said, and entered a beautiful banquet hall, which was, like the rest of the palace, made of snow and ice. The clear, domed ceiling let in plenty of light, and a crystal chandelier hung from above. The table was set, the serving trays laid out on the icy surface. We all took a seat, and I was grateful for my snow pants, or else sitting on a block of ice, despite how delicately it was carved to resemble a chair, would have been very uncomfortable.
I expected you would be hungry. So when the gods sent word to me about your possible arrival, I sent some of the nymphs to collect some extra food, she explained. The water has been infused with orange energy to help you get your strength back, but I'm afraid we don't have many varieties of food sources on the continent. We're limited to local fish, penguin, seal, and whale.
Is it legal to eat those foods?
Kate asked, concern crossing her features.
I thought they're protected species.
It's illegal for humans to hunt them, correct.
Keone removed the cover from the platter closest to her and took a large portion of what looked to be red meat.
But human laws hardly apply to myself and my nymphs. Now, please dig in. I recommend the whale. It's delicious.
She cut into the red meat on her plate, which I assumed to be whale, placed it in her mouth, and smiled as she chewed. I wouldn't normally try any of those foods, minus the fish. But I was starving, and red meat looked heavenly. So, I helped myself to the whale, surprised when I liked it. I more than liked it. I loved it. It had zero fishiness at all. It tasted like beef, but softer and more tender. I finished off the portion in less than 10 minutes and helped myself to seconds. But despite enjoying the whale, I avoided the penguin and the seal. Those animals were too cute to eat. As we ate, we explained to Keone how we were able to travel to the ice palace. Apparently, most groups don't make it to the front door. The last time someone made it was over 100 years ago, when a demigod son of Poseidon made an attempt. He was able to see the ice palace because of his connection to water. But according to Keone, he was undeserving of receiving what he came for and had to pay the price. Whatever that meant. She refused to tell us more.
It's an interesting story, she said once we finished telling her about our journey. The five of you have completed quite an impressive feat.
Thank you, I said, sitting straighter at the compliment. We had no choice but to try, since the only way we can get Medusa's head is if we have the golden sword. We came all the way here for it, and trust me, it wasn't easy. But we made it, which must mean something. I took a sip of water, placed it back down on the table, looked her in the eye, and said, "So, now that we're here, and now that you know why we're here, will you be able to give us the sword?" Chapter 16.
I understand your problem.
Keone leaned back in her chair and frowned.
And I do want to help you, because yes, the golden sword is here in my palace.
Great. I forced a smile despite her chilly tone. When can we get it?
That's where the problem comes in, she said. You see, the sword is frozen in a block of ice.
with magic so strong that not even I can free it. I'm simply here to guard it until the one who can free it comes to get it.
Frozen in a block of ice? Kate repeated. Like Excalibur in the stone?
Yes, Keone said. The same type of magic used to encase Excalibur in the stone was used to keep the golden sword in the ice. Magic from the goddess Aphrodite. The Arthurians called her the Lady of the Lake. But of course, we know better than that.
So, if you have the sword here, can we try to free it from the ice? Danielle asked.
Keone raised an eyebrow. The sword has been encased in the ice for over 2 millennia, she said. Many before you tried to free it, and they all have failed. Great warriors they were. You think that one of you can do what they could not?
The gods wouldn't have sent us here if we had no chance, Blake said.
Very well, Keone sighed. But beware. There is a consequence if you fail.
She looked at each of us, as if expecting that the mention of a consequence would scare us away. But we hadn't traversed through the freezing cold tundra and fought nymphs who were trying to kill us for nothing.
We're listening.
I held her steely gaze, waiting for her to continue.
Your group will be given 3 attempts to free the sword, she said. If after 3 attempts you do not succeed, you will be bound to servitude here for 7 years.
We were silent as we took in what she'd said.
Why don't we take the block of ice with the sword home through a portal, place it in front of a fireplace, and let it melt? Chris asked. Then we can free it without having to pull it out.
Clever idea, Keone said, and Chris puffed his chest at the compliment. However, the block of ice is part of the ice palace itself. To bring it back, you would have to bring back the entire palace, and no portal in history has ever been close to that large. So I am afraid that plan would be impossible.
When would the servitude begin? Kate asked.
Immediately after the failed 3rd try, Keone said. If you fail, you will be escorted to my ice nymphs, who will use ice cuffs to bind you here.
Would you be willing to bargain? Kate asked. If we fail, could our servitude begin after the summer solstice?
There will be no bargaining, Keone said. I did not create these rules. They were put in place by the goddess Aphrodite herself when the sword was first brought here, to ensure that only the worthy attempted to free it. If you're not up to the task, then perhaps you shouldn't try at all. That would be disappointing after you made it all this way, but I will grant you one favor, since I'm impressed that you made it to the palace alive. I will create a portal for your return home.
That's very generous of you, I said, relieved that we wouldn't have to traverse the frozen tundra again. I wasn't sure if we would be able to survive the cold a second time. But if we do get the sword, will you create the portal for us as well?
Of course, she said. I promise, on Zeus himself, that if you attempt and succeed, or if you decide not to take the risk at all, I will create your portal home. It's the least I can do after how much you're risking to save us all. Now, what will you choose? Remember, only 3 of you may attempt to free the sword. So choose wisely.
Why only 3? Danielle asked. We made it here together. Why can't we all try?
The rule is in place so that only the worthy make an attempt for the sword, accompanied only by those who believe in them, she explained. Otherwise, groups would storm the palace by the dozens or by the hundreds, all after the power that the sword can give them. We couldn't have that. So the choice is yours. Which 3 will it be?
We need to discuss this, Blake said, not giving any of us a chance to speak. Privately, if you don't mind.
Of course.
Keone stood from her seat, maneuvering herself without her frozen ice gown hitting her chair or the table.
I understand. I'll leave you to it. A nymph will be waiting outside the door. You may send her to fetch me once you reach a decision.
Kioni spun around and exited the dining room, leaving us alone to discuss our next move.
Chapter 17.
I think we should try, Danielle said the moment Kioni was gone. Kate chewed on her lower lip, moving her uneaten food around her plate with her fork.
And risk three of us being trapped here in servitude for 7 years, she asked. I don't know. It feels like too big of a gamble.
But don't you remember what Nyx told us? I said. We're the only ones who can stop Typhon and seal the portal to Kerberos. She told us that we had tough decisions ahead, and I can't imagine that turning around now is what she wants us to do.
I agree,
Blake said, and knowing that I had his support instantly made me feel stronger.
But the difficult decision isn't figuring out if we want to try this or not. We're here, so we're doing this. It's figuring out which three of us will attempt to free that sword.
Even though I knew it probably wouldn't help, I reached for the sun pendant hanging around my neck. Apollo, what should we do? I thought, trying harder than ever to send my question to him. Maybe this time he would answer. Of course, nothing happened. I dropped my hand down to my lap, letting the pendant fall back to my neck. Why had I bothered trying? He clearly didn't care about helping me. Blake reached for my hand and squeezed it, as if he knew what had just happened. I smiled at him in thanks, grateful that he was here for me, even though my father wasn't. We would figure this out together. We had to.
I think Nicole should try, Danielle said.
I did a double take, making sure I'd heard her right. I had. Why? I asked. Out of the four of them, she was the last person I thought would want to put so much trust in me. Unless she was volunteering me because she wanted me to be an ice slave for the next 7 years. Which I didn't say out loud. Because while Danielle and I weren't best friends, she didn't hate me that much either. At least, I didn't think she did. Because, as much as it irritated me at first, being the center element makes you unique, she said.
You ignited our powers on the night of the comet. It would be stupid if you weren't one of the three.
I agreed with her, but I didn't want to sound full of myself. So I just said a simple thank you. The others unanimously agreed that I should be one of the three also.
I think I should try too, Kate spoke up. This is the sword of Athena, and I'm a descendant of Athena. That connection could be unwise to ignore.
Are you sure?
Chris asked, his eyes full of concern.
Because if you're not the one, and if the other two aren't either, then you...
We'll have to serve Kioni for the next 7 years, Kate said. I know. But three of us have to take that risk, and it makes sense for me to be one of those three.
Chris pressed his lips into a line and said nothing. But the rest of us agreed with Kate, because her logic did make sense.
We need one more person, Chris said. And for the record, if we don't get that sword, it doesn't mean the end of our journey. I know that Kioni said that the three who try will be forced to stay here for 7 years, but we've been through too much to accept that. If we fail, no one's staying here. We'll figure out a way to escape, even if we have to fight to do it.
I was thinking the same thing.
Blake flicked his lighter on and off, the flame reflecting dangerously in his eyes.
We fought our way in, and we can fight our way out. If it comes to it, I'll burn this ice palace to the ground.
I agree that we can't stay here, Kate said. But first things first, we need to determine who the third person will be who will try for the sword.
Danielle, I said suddenly. It should be Danielle.
Really?
Danielle smirked and raised an eyebrow.
You're not just saying that because you want to see me turned into an ice slave for the next 7 years?
No,
I held her gaze, wanting her to know that I would never do something like that. I'm saying it because you've been instrumental on this mission. If it hadn't been for you, we might not have beaten the ice nymphs. Plus, water is your element. It makes sense that you should try removing the sword from the ice.
I agree with you.
She nodded, her eyes serious.
I was about to volunteer myself, but you spoke up first.
So it's decided? I asked, looking around at everyone. Danielle, Kate, and I will try for the sword.
That makes the most sense, Kate said. Unless Blake and Chris can think of any reasons why it would be better for one of them to try.
I had my big moment back in Greece when I flew the yacht over Charybdis,
Chris said.
As cool as it would be to pull the sword out of a block of ice, I can't think of a reason why one of you girls shouldn't have the spotlight today. And like I said earlier, I swear on Zeus himself that if you fail, we'll get you out of here. No one's becoming an ice slave. Not today, and not ever.
Thanks, Kate said softly, smiling shyly at Chris. Then she took a deep breath and pushed her hair behind her ears, apparently back to business.
Blake? She asked, and all eyes were on him. Are you all right with this plan too?
He didn't answer as quickly as Chris did. Instead, he stared off into space, his brow furrowed, as if he were in deep thought.
I can't agree as easily as Chris did,
he finally said.
Because what if I can use my power to melt the ice around the sword? Plus, the gods put me in charge of weapons when we went on the scavenger hunt back in Kinsley. I should try for the sword instead of Nicole.
Why instead of me? I asked. Is it because you don't want me taking the risk?
Of course I prefer to take the risk instead of you, he said. But it's more than that. Athena forged the sword, so it makes sense for Kate to try. It's encased in ice, so it makes sense for Danielle to try. I have a strong connection with weapons, and I can use my power to melt the ice.
He looked around at the others.
What do you all think?
He asked them.
Nicole's a fantastic fighter, and her powers have saved us all on more occasions than I can count. But her abilities and heritage have no connection to this task. Should she step down and let me try instead?
Kate probed her food with her fork, staring at it in deep thought.
Blake's point makes strategic sense, she finally said, dropping her fork and looking back at us. I hate to see Nicole step down, but I agree that Blake should try.
I'm fine with it if you all are, Chris agreed.
The only person left was Danielle. I understand what you're all saying, she started. But I still think Nicole should try, since her element is so powerful. I really believe that she might be the one meant to do this.
Then you don't think Blake should try?
Chris asked.
No, she said. He's the expert with weapons, so he definitely should. As should Kate, since she's a descendant of Athena. Which leaves one option. I'll give up my spot so Nicole can try for the sword.
What? My mouth dropped open, unable to believe what she'd said. But you have power over water, and the sword is encased in ice.
The sword is locked in ice because of a spell cast on it by Aphrodite, Danielle said. The magic of the gods is more powerful than ours. I couldn't control the water when Charybdis had her hold on it. So why should my power over water be stronger than Aphrodite's? If Blake, Kate, and I try and fail, we'll always wonder if we made a huge mistake by not giving you a chance. You have to be one of the three, which is why I'm stepping down. And like Chris said, if we're not successful, no one's getting left behind. We'll either all be trapped as ice slaves together, or we'll fight our way out. I'm hoping it's the latter.
We'll fight. Chris said, banging his fist on the table for emphasis. We won't leave anyone behind. So, Nicole, what do you say? Are you trying for the sword or what?
I don't know. I wrung my hands together, unsure. They all believed in me so much. But what if I tried for the sword and failed? Then I would be letting everyone down.
As much as I don't want to admit it, because I don't want you taking the risk. Danielle's right,
Blake told me.
Your power united the five of us. You've been the center of this since day one. And you're the only demigod in the group. Getting this sword could be your destiny.
Exactly, Chris said. It would be pretty stupid if we didn't let the one demigod here have a go at this.
Kate? I looked to my friend, hoping she would give me sound advice.
I would prefer if all five of us were able to try. It would give us the best odds.
She chewed on her lower lip, and I had a feeling that she wasn't sure what we should do.
But I agree with the others. It makes sense for you to be one of the three.
I looked around at each of them, surprised by how confident they appeared. And they were all watching me, waiting for me to agree. They were looking at me as if I were their leader. I didn't want to let them down, especially because if I didn't try for the sword, and if none of them got it, I would always wonder if it were my fault. Okay, I finally said, forcing myself to sit straighter. If this is what you all think is best, then I'll do it.
So this is our final decision? Kate asked. Me, Blake, and Nicole will try for the sword. If you don't agree, speak up now.
No one said a word.
Okay, she said, standing up from her seat. Let's let the ice nymph know that we're ready to speak to Keone.
Chapter 18.
I hear you've reached your decision, Keone said, as she strolled back into the dining room. What's it going to be?
We're going to try for the sword, Blake said.
Really?
Keone's expression remained neutral.
What makes you think you'll have a better chance than everyone else who's tried and failed in the past?
Because we're not doing this for selfish reasons, I said, the explanation rolling off my tongue. Everyone else who came here for the sword most likely wanted it for personal gain and power. But we're not here for ourselves. We're here because the sword could be the key to saving the world. That has to count for something, right?
Indeed, it might, Keone said, smiling thoughtfully. Let's be on our way then. We have no time to waste.
She led us to the back of the palace, where a single, unassuming door appeared to have been carved into the icy wall. At least, I would have thought it was a door, if it had a knob. Keone pressed her palm against the place where the doorknob should have been. The perimeter of the door glowed blue at her touch. And then it swung open, revealing the bottom of a narrow circular stairway.
I hope you don't mind walking, Keone said, hiking up her gown and placing her foot on the first step. The sword is kept in the tallest tower in the palace. It's 500 steps to the top.
500 steps? And you never thought to build an elevator? Chris asked.
The steps are for security purposes, Keone explained. We have no idea who will venture here to make an attempt for the sword. Not everyone comes here with good intentions. But if they do make it here, it's my duty to give them their three attempts. Afterward, there's no way out of the tower room except for going down the steps, where my nymphs await at the bottom with the chains. To put it plainly, this setup ensures that there's no way to escape.
I looked over my shoulder and saw nymphs filling up the room behind us, grinning maliciously. Three of them held chains with cuffs on the ends. The chains that would bind us here for 7 years if we didn't succeed in getting the sword. The metal glistened, and I realized that it was covered in a layer of ice. The nymphs caressed the chains, their smiles gleaming, as if they couldn't wait to snap those cuffs around our wrists. I didn't know what would happen if they put us in those chains, but I had a sinking feeling that I didn't want to find out. Then I didn't have to imagine anymore, because I saw it. Or rather, I saw him. If he was still even alive. A frail, thin man who appeared around my dad's age stood behind the nymphs, his wrist bound by the icy cuffs. His skin was so pale that it was practically translucent, and it was covered in ice crystals. His hair was frozen.